Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Linda LaCoaux, and today I'm here with Brad Bleasdale from Fall Creek Farms in Spencer, Tennessee. How are you today, Brad?
Doing great. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining us. So today our topic is raw milk. So tell me a little bit about what you do to start off with.
All right. Well, we have a small, I guess what you'd call a micro dairy down in Spencer, and we specialize in the production of raw or unpasteurized milk from our farm. My wife and I do the goats, and my son Ben and his wife Joanna do the cows. And between all of us, we deliver unpasteurized or raw milk everywhere from Chattanooga to Cookeville and points in between.
That is a pretty big reach. So what is the difference between pasteurized and unpasteurized milk?
Well, Linda, the simple answer to that is obviously one of them's been pasteurized and one of them hasn't. But it really goes quite a bit further than that. Pasteurized milk has been heated to a certain temperature, theoretically to kill the pathogens within the milk, whereas unpasteurized milk is in its natural state. It comes from the cows or the goats. It's filtered and immediately chilled. But that is all the processing that happens other than putting it into the bottles for delivery.
And just for people who don't know, talk to me a little bit about the pasteurization process. What temperature is it heated to? What is that supposed to do aside from just killing pathogens?
Well, you know, it's funny. I don't actually know the temperature since we don't do it. I think it's 140 degrees for a certain amount of time. But since we don't do it, that doesn't really enter into my equation. The difference is really this. According to the USDA, there's no such thing as safe raw milk, so their recommendation is that all milk be pasteurized. Obviously, I don't agree with that. But you would think that the test for whether milk has been properly pasteurized would be, does it have any pathogens in it? There are five major bacteria and viral organisms that could theoretically get into milk. And you'd think that, well, in order to determine whether or not this milk has been pasteurized, they would test to see if those organisms are in the milk. On the other side of the equation, there are approximately 60 beneficial enzymes and probiotics in milk, and those do things like help you to digest the fats, help you digest the proteins, help you digest the calcium. Well, the interesting thing is the test to determine whether your milk has been properly pasteurized is not, have we killed these bad organisms? The test is, have we killed these beneficial microbes, these beneficial enzymes? So, according to the powers that be, the only safe milk is what I would call dead milk.
That seems a little counterintuitive.
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing in the history of diseases and medicines and things like that. Pasteurization, when it was invented back in the 1800s, was mainly done to make it so that grapes would not ferment. And then its usefulness was extended to other products. But it also coincided with things like running water, modern bathroom facilities, and understanding of germ theory. So the incidence of foodborne illnesses was dropping dramatically in the United States already before pasteurization even came to be. And when it comes to milk, in my opinion and the opinion of many, it's not only unnecessary, but not beneficial at all.
So what makes raw milk better?
Well, I think there's a few things. First of all, if, like me, you're a believer in local, most people who acquire raw milk get it from a local farmer. You're supporting a local farm. You're supporting the local farm economy. And, you know, I'm a little prejudiced in that regard, I guess, but I think that's a good thing. The other thing is that it has all of those nutrients, all of those enzymes, all of those probiotics still in the milk, the things that are so critical for proper absorption. When I was a kid, no one had ever heard of anybody who was lactose intolerant. No one had ever heard of autism. These things didn't exist, right? I mean, the incidence of childhood cancer for example, has grown 10,000% in the last 40 years. Obviously, something is going on somewhere that the incidence of all these things has increased so dramatically. And I think you'd agree with me that getting back to a more natural state of food is going to be a big way to counteract these things. And so raw milk is natural. It's local. It's unprocessed. And if you know your farmer, you know what they're feeding them. Our animals are fed almost all grass, hay, supplemented with non-GMO feeds. So it's a much cleaner and purer product than you're going to get elsewhere.
And that makes a lot of sense. So again, we're talking with Brad Bleasdale from Fall Creek Farms. Just a question for you. How did you get started with all of this?
That's a great question. Well,
Sounds like there's a story behind it.
we'd be here for two or three episodes just to go over all of that. But the short version is I was a financial advisor down in Florida, not very happy with the way my life was going. And we lived in a gated community, and we had bought the home of the guy who had started this gated community many, many years before, back in the early 20s. And we found out that he had exempted himself on the deed from the homeowners association requirements. So here we are in an 8,000 square foot home in a gated community, and we decided to get some chickens, get some goats, and then I sort of had a midlife crisis at 40 and bought 55 acres of trees with, you know, trees holding the dirt together in Spencer, Tennessee. We actually milked the goats on the way up here at rest stops. It was pretty funny. And then about, I guess it's 8 years ago, the state of Tennessee passed the herd share law because it's illegal to sell unpasteurized milk in Tennessee. I could actually go to jail if I sold it to you. But thankfully, the state passed a law called the herd share law, so people can, it's kind of like owning a mutual fund. They pay a fee to own an undivided portion of our herd, and then when they pay us, they're not paying us for the milk. They're paying us to milk the cows and milk the goats and take good care of them. And that way, people can legally get our beautiful milk, and I don't go to jail.
And not going to jail is a good thing.
Absolutely.
Well, moving forward, I know that you had mentioned that the incidence of childhood cancer has gone up dramatically. What are the health benefits to consuming something like this? All of the different things that are in the milk when it's raw and in its natural state, what are the health benefits to consuming that?
Well, the first thing is you're getting them in their natural state. You're getting a good supply of calcium, a good supply of healthy fats. And, you know, when I moved here, my cholesterol was over 500. And since then, it's dropped by about half, but I don't really worry about that anymore, having studied up on cholesterol and realizing that every single cell in my body has cholesterol in it. So I don't have this fear of cholesterol anymore. But if you look at some of those enzymes that are killed by pasteurization, for example, phosphatase helps people to absorb phosphorus and calcium. That's killed when the milk is pasteurized. So that enzyme that's going to help you digest the milk isn't there. Amylase, it's needed to break down starch, glycogen, other related carbohydrates. It's killed. Lipase helps you to digest raw milk, milk fats. That's dead when you pasteurize it. So when you look on the government website, it says raw milk has essentially the same nutrition as pasteurized milk. Well, if all you're looking at is protein and calcium and fat, that's true. Those are not materially changed by pasteurization. But if you're looking at what your body can actually use from that milk, the differences are really dramatic. And we could spend hours talking about what's going on with the food supply in America, which I think is a large component. I don't think there's any one single cause anyone can identify as what's causing the health problems in America. But I saw the other day in the news that the children being born today are going to be the first generation in America whose life expectancy is lower than their parents. There's something wrong.
Yeah, there's something definitely wrong. So from what you're explaining, it's kind of like when I go over with my clients how, you know, at some point someone decided that it was a great idea to break vitamins out into individual supplements. Mm-hmm. But when you eat food, you're getting the nutritional benefit of that whole food. Mm-hmm. When you break things down into individual pieces, now all of a sudden you don't have the ability to digest certain things based on the fact that you're lacking in others. So that's kind of the same concept with raw milk.
I think that's right. And they're in a natural state, not in a synthetic state. So if you look, for example, at the ingredients in child's formula for women who aren't going to breastfeed their kids, when you look at the ingredient list, it's mostly synthetic. And you say, well, what would I rather have for my child? Would I rather have something natural or something synthetic? And one of the beauties, particularly of goat milk, from a nutritional, digestible point of view, goat milk is almost exactly identical to mother's breast milk. And that's why a lot of our customers use it for their children. A lot of our folks come recommended by veterinarians because their dogs have allergies. Their dogs are not able to absorb store-bought milk. And we get a lot of recommendations from veterinarians for pet use. And there's so many myths out there. Here's a good myth. I've had people say to me, humans are the only animals where the adult still drinks milk. And I can tell you from my own experience, that's absolutely not correct. If you put a bowl of milk in front of a dog or a cat, what are they going to do? They're going to lap it up. My daughter-in-law has a video of mature pigs suckling on her cows. So if you want to see something truly hilarious and dispel a myth at the same time, that video will do it. When I was a kid up in Massachusetts, we raised cattle, and we had a steer named Leonard, and he weighed over 1,000 pounds, but he was still suckling on his mother. So, there's a lot of myths about a lot of things, and the idea that humans are the only adult mammals that should or do drink milk is just wrong.
That's pretty incredible. Well, we are talking to Brad Bleasdale from Fall Creek Farms, and when we come back, we're going to get into why people think this is dangerous. Welcome back to Local Matters. I'm your host, Linda LaCoux. We're sitting here today talking with Brad Bleasdale from Fall Creek Farms in Spencer, Tennessee, on the topic of raw milk versus pasteurized milk. Why do people think that raw milk is so dangerous, in your opinion?
Well, I think that's pretty obvious. If you get on your favorite search engine and you type in raw milk, you will probably be inundated with articles from the USDA and the CDC or even a video about the dangers of raw milk. One of my favorites is a quote from, I think it's from the video, and it says, "There's no such thing as safe raw milk." And the problem with that, Linda, is it's so patently false that it's hard to know how to fight against it, because most people, that's what they've been taught for so long that that's their immediate reaction. And it's kind of discouraging on the one hand, and yet it just energizes me to do stuff like this where I can help to educate people, because in fact, if you look at the statistics provided by the CDC and the USDA, not only are they incorrect when they say there's no such thing as safe raw milk is actually one of the safest food products that you can use. And I'd be glad to bore you with a few little statistics if you've got time for that.
And go for it. Shoot. Bore me with some statistics.
Okay. Well, if we look at foodborne illness in general, the American food supply is unbelievably safe. The highest estimate from the Centers for Disease Control is that on average every year, somewhere between 2,600 and 3,800 people a year die from foodborne illness. Now, obviously, nobody wants to die from foodborne illness, right?
Obviously.
But if we take their highest number, 3,800, and we divide that into the population of the United States, which is right at 328 million people, then the percentage of people who die from all foodborne illnesses in the United States is 0.00116%. Look at it another way. 3,800 people a year at the max die from foodborne illness. And yet, in the worst year ever since they've started keeping records, the CDC thinks that maybe, they don't know for sure, two people died from unpasteurized milk. Let's compare that with the history. Back in 1985, out in California, Jalisco Farms, making cheese from pasteurized milk, 62 people died in California and around the country, but mostly in California, from cheese made with pasteurized milk. 2014, two people died from pasteurized milk. 2015, Bluebell ice cream, pasteurized milk, three people dead. Between 1998 and 2013, 10 dead confirmed from pasteurized milk, three in that same year, 98 to 2013, however many years that is, it's a good long time, three suspected. So the odds are tremendously in the favor of not dying from raw milk. But when you look at it in toto, the fact of the matter is that in a country this huge, it's almost miraculous that so few people die from all foodborne illnesses put together. Leafy greens, hamburger, chicken, seafood, all of these things, cantaloupes. I mean, come on, a few years ago, something like 22 people died from cantaloupes. But the government doesn't say there's no such thing as a safe cantaloupe. They don't require that we pasteurize cantaloupes. They don't prohibit the interstate sale of cantaloupes. And yet, raw milk, the interstate sale of it is prohibited. The sale of it is prohibited in most states. And we're told that unless it's pasteurized, it's not safe. It's just not true. So it's an uphill battle trying to educate people not only on the benefits, but the safety of raw milk. Now, is that to say that no one has never gotten sick from it? No. Sometimes people do. Is that to say no one in the history of the universe has ever died from it? Not saying that either. What I am saying is, statistically, our food supply in the entire United States is very safe, and among the safest of foods is raw milk.
We are talking to Brad Bleasdale from Fall Creek Farms. And one of the things I wanted to ask you is, why do you do this? What is your passion and your drive behind it, aside from educating people on the benefits of it? Why?
When I decided to move to Tennessee from Florida, I was having, you know, a typical midlife crisis, I guess you'd call it. But we really, my wife and I, we really wanted to do something that would make a difference in people's lives, not trying to get to be world famous, not trying to write, you know, books that will be still read in 100 years, which is probably none of the books being written today. But what we wanted to do was say, how can we have a positive impact on our community, particularly on a local level? And what better way to serve, what better way to help provide, what better way to make an impact than to provide local clean food? And by doing that with our milk, especially the benefits, you know, we are a little prejudiced toward the goat milk side of things, I must admit. And when we look at, if you looked at the emails, the texts, the letters we get from our customers, thank you, I've never been able to drink milk. Thank you, my daughter hasn't been able to use milk for years, and now she's better. Thank you, my dog's skin condition is completely cleared up. The only change we made is feeding him raw milk. On and on and on, we get so many benefits. We don't get the benefit, our customers get the benefit, but we get that. You know, when you ask the why, I guess it's because inside it feels really good to know we're doing something good.
Making a difference is incredibly important, especially in the community level. So thank you, by the way, for doing that. My mom drinks your milk, so do I. It tastes absolutely wonderful. What about the people who talk about, you know, the taste difference, the flavor difference? Because personally, I haven't noticed one. It actually tastes better. It tastes cleaner. It tastes richer. What is your take on that?
Yeah, that's a great question. When we do blind taste tests, most people can't believe when they try the goat milk that it's goat milk. Because if you do pasteurize goat milk, which you can buy at a health food store, one of the enzymes in goat milk is lipase. And lipase, when it's activated before you drink it, will make milk taste a little goaty, for lack of a better term. And because goat milk is so much more digestible and it's naturally homogenized, you know how on the milk you get, you drink cow milk mostly, and the cream rises up on that, right?
Right.
Well, goat milk, that doesn't happen. The fat molecules are much smaller. That's why they're more readily absorbed. So from a scientific standpoint, there's a larger surface area for that lipase to act upon. So pasteurization dramatically changes the flavor of goat milk. So when people get it unpasteurized, their typical response is, I can't believe this is goat milk because I've had goat milk. Well, they bought it at the health food store. It had been pasteurized. The you know, if you talk to anybody that's into making food taste good, what do? You add some bacon fat, it's going to taste better, right?
Exactly.
So the fat molecules on the cow milk are much larger, so it has a much richer, creamier flavor. The actual fat content is about the same. So even my wife will kill me for saying this, but drinking the cow milk is like drinking an ice cream cone, really. It's just fabulous. And I drink lots of each. People are amazed because they'll come and they'll want to get, you know, join our herd share program, and they'll say, well, what am I going to do with a gallon of milk a week? And there's many, many days I drink a half a gallon a day. So it's always, I have to bite my lip to not be a wise guy with that.
And just for the people that don't know, what is a CSA?
A CSA is Community Supported Agriculture. It's sort of an unfortunate name until you learn about it. The way it got started was actually over in Europe, because farmers make most of their money in the spring, summer, and fall. And then in the winter time, when they need to repair their equipment, order seeds, fix their irrigation, they're usually broke. And as you know, the number of farmers has dropped so dramatically. For example, in the United States, there are so few farmers now, it's not even listed as an occupation on the census anymore. So what they discovered over in Europe is people like their food, they like to get it locally, and they didn't like their farmers going bankrupt. So some smart person said, well, how about if we pay you in the off season and you deliver our vegetables as they grow, and we'll kind of share in the risk and the reward of your farm. So they called that community supported agriculture. It started about 20 years ago on a small farm in upstate New York. I actually met the lady who started it in the States. And now it's very, very popular. And the way it works is people pay in the fall or winter for next year's production. That way the farmer can have money to repair their equipment, order seeds, which are very expensive. It's hard to believe that a little shoebox contains $300 or $400 worth of seeds. And get their irrigation in order. And then the following year they get, from June to September, they get a beautiful box of vegetables every week.
Well, I've done several of the CSAs through the downtown Green Market. I've sampled at least two or three of them. I know other people in my family have sampled other ones as well, and they're all good. They're all amazing.
Oh, yeah. There's the farmers at that market, the best. Everybody needs to be at the corner of Broad and Dixie every Saturday morning.
Now, just as we're wrapping up here, how do people get in touch with you?
The best way is email fallcreekfarms@gmail.com. If you can find us on Facebook, the Facebook Messenger thing, I'm pretty technologically challenged, I can tell you. But the Facebook Messenger thing works pretty well as well.
All right. Well, that sounds great. Thank you so much. Again, we're talking to Brad Bleasdale from Fall Creek Farms in Spencer, Tennessee. Thank you so much for joining us today and for all this amazing information and the boring statistics.
Oh, no, thank you. I really appreciate it.